Good morning, everyone. Welcome to today's cyber seminar. This is Dr. Robin Masheb, Director of Education at the Prime Center of Innovation at VA Connecticut, and I will be hosting our monthly pain call entitled Spotlight on Pain Management. Spotlight on Pain Management is a collaboration of the Prime Center, the VA National Program for Pain Management, the NIH-VA-DoD Pain Management Collaboratory, and the HSR Center for Information Dissemination and Education Resources, or CIDR. I'm delighted today to tell you about today's session, which is Disability Claims as a Pathway to Pain Treatment in Veterans, Screening, Brief Intervention, and Referral to Treatment for Pain Management, ESPRT-PM. And our speakers today are Dr. Mark Rosen, who is Professor of Psychiatry at Yale, and Director of Addiction Services at VA Connecticut. He has developed and tested interventions based on the relationships between service use, finances, and disability claims. We also have with us Dr. Steve Martino, who is Professor of Psychiatry at Yale and Chief of the Psychology Service at VA Connecticut. He has tested different strategies for implementing motivational interviewing based brief interventions in community programs and medical settings within hybrid effectiveness implementation multi-site trials. Our presenters will be speaking for approximately 45 minutes and we'll be taking your questions at the end of the talk. Please feel free to use the Q&A screen. Immediately following today's session will be a very brief feedback form, and we appreciate you completing this as it's critically important to help us provide you with great programming. Also on today's call, we have Dr. Friedhelm Sandbrink, who is a neurologist, the VA National Program Director for Pain Management, and Director of Pain Management in the Department of Neurology at Washington, D.C. VA Medical Center. Also is Dr. Bob Kearns, one of the directors of the NIH-DoD-VA Pain Management Collaboratory Coordinating Center, and Senior Research Scientist and Professor Emeritus at the Yale School of Medicine. Dr. Sandbrink and Dr. Kearns will be available to take any questions that we have related to policy. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our presenters.
Hi, and welcome to the cyber seminar. I'm going to start, and Steve and I are going to tag team it, which kind of represents our work together as well. If you make it through the introduction, you'll know what the title, you'll know what the talk is about. So this kind of long five-line title, the first two lines, Disability Claims as a Pathway to Pain Treatment in Veterans. So this is the idea that when veterans file claims for service connection for musculoskeletal conditions, the question we're addressing is, to what extent is that a pathway to treatment? To what extent are veterans just applying for service connection for financial compensation and that's it? To what extent does it represent distress and an opportunity to intervene and engage veterans in treatment? So that's these first two lines, disability claims as a pathway to pain treatment. The next three lines are sort of the how. So if you have veterans who are filing service connection claims, how do you connect them to treatment? And we're testing an intervention called screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment. And the idea is to take people who are not originally, who don't identify themselves as treatment seeking, they identify themselves as financial claim seeking, and motivate them using motivational interviewing, screen them for their needs, intervene briefly, and refer and connect them to treatment. So that's the title, and that is what the talk is about. We have no significant disclosures. The avatars on Outlook have to be dull, but the photos for this don't have to be. So I'm the one next to the psychedelic bagel. This partnership represents my longstanding interest in the way people integrate their financial concerns into treatment. And Steve is an international leader in motivational interviewing, in developing and testing motivational interviewing interventions, in seeing that those interventions are implemented, and in testing the implementation with creative study designs, which you'll see in this talk. So Comp and Penn, one thing that's striking about Comp and Penn for musculoskeletal complaints is just how common it is. Over half of the post 9/11 veterans treated at the VA are service connected for a musculoskeletal disorder. Over half. And comorbid substance misuse is common. This third bullet point, there were 116,000 new back or spine claims awarded during fiscal year 2023. And we think this is a great opportunity for early intervention. The history of the work, which we're going to present, NIH has really kind of, in a sustained way, supported interventions to engage veterans in non-opioid pain treatment, and that's allowed us to pursue this work over the last 10 years, and we anticipate going forward. So the first work we're going to present was the therapy development study. It was in R34. You just look at the row that says R34. That was a 3-year study. The therapy was delivered by EL staff, a postdoc named Ross McLean, who you may have heard of. And if you look at the key investigators in the right-hand column, this is really kind of an all-star team. And we've been very fortunate to have superb investigators work with us, if you just sort of look through the names. The next row, the one that says UG3UH3, the therapy development study was a single site with Yale staff delivering the intervention face to face. The current study involves Yale staff delivering the intervention through a hub and spoke model to veterans at 8 sites in New England. And then we're going to talk about an implementation study in which the therapy is going to be delivered by VA social workers and nurses in the military to VA transition care program and actually implement it the way it would be implemented without NIH support. So this is the first iteration of ESPRT counseling, the R34. We contacted veterans around the time of their Comp and Penn exam, and they had we sent them letters and then called them and invited them to participate in the study. For those who participated, the first session was delivered in person. It was about 60 minutes. And it was, it started with a screening around pain, which we suspected would be positive given the Comp and Penn claim. The brief intervention, discussion of pain care options for people who were sufficiently motivated, help connecting to treatment. And then the pivot to substance use was to say something like, a lot of people who have pain drink or use other drugs to relieve their pain. I'd like to ask you a bit about your substance use. And then basically the same screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment around substance use. Veterans at the end of the session were asked to develop a change plan depending on where they were in stage of change. And then there were up to 2 brief telephone follow-ups. And this consort diagram actually is an important part of the data. So I'm going to spend a little time walking you through it. So for a 2-year study, we invited 735 people to participate, and that's noteworthy. There aren't many studies where you can just find 735 people who are at some sort of pivot point around their pain care at a single site, who are likely to be, who have any chance of being receptive to a new intervention. A fair number of people who get the letters just don't respond to them. These are not people who are treatment seeking by definition. They're people who the letter says we're writing to you because you filed a claim for service connection. 257 completed a baseline interview. And for the purpose of this study, we only enrolled those with risky substance use. So that was 101. So about 40%, we didn't count nicotine. So 40% of the people who we screened had risky substance use. They were then randomized to either the full expert PM counseling, a pain module only. So we did it without the substance use emphasis because we were worried the substance use emphasis might be off-putting, and then a control group with no additional treatment. So the next, just going down this consort diagram on the left side, where it says 39 completed, 78%. And then if you move to the right, 20 completed, 71%. So of the people who are, so participating in the counseling wasn't a required part of study participation. It wasn't paid or anything like that. And it required coming in for an extra session. The participation rates were quite good, and you'll see that with our later studies as well. So people who had filed claims for financial compensation were receptive to this approach about being offered more counseling. So the findings from this study, I'm just going to summarize it. The veterans who filed musculoskeletal disorder claims had significant amounts of distress. We excluded a small number of people who did not have substantial pain. There are people who file service connection claims because they had sprained their ankle or twisted a knee at some point in the past and have no distress at the time, but they're filing the claim. It's a kind of marker if they have a problem in the future. But that's a small number of people that would have brought down this mean. But the mean pain interference among the enrolled people was 5.0. And as I'd mentioned, 39% had risky substance use within 28 days. The veterans were receptive to the counseling, I've shown you. The counseling over the 12 weeks was associated with less self-reported substance use, more use of VA pain services, but no significant change in pain severity. So we took away from this that CMP as a gateway to treatment was a promising venue, that there was the potential to engage patients in VA treatment, but we needed more data, a larger study, and longer follow-up to see whether this impacted pain severity. And the full paper is in Pain Medicine. Steve, take it away.
All right. Do you want to transfer to me or shall you just advance?
I'll just advance.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. So our next step in this research journey was to scale up Esper PM and to do this within a pragmatic hybrid type 1 effectiveness implementation study. And so what we did is we partnered with all of the medical centers within the New England VISN 1 to implement a hub and spoke model or strategy to put Esper PM or make it available to veterans within the VISN. These would be veterans who had filed a claim for musculoskeletal disorder and who were reporting some clinical problems with pain as a central issue. And so this trial was a blend of pragmatism and explanatory research, trying to get at the effectiveness of Esper PM when used in a more widespread fashion within a delivery system that would be similar to how the VA often implements different types of clinical interventions. And so VISNs are organized in a hub and spoke manner. At the time, the clinical resource hubs were really developing when we were starting this study, and also use that as a basic approach. And centers of excellence across VHA use this model. So we thought this would be a good opportunity, in essence, to pilot the use of a hub and spoke model as a means of testing predominantly the effectiveness of ESPER PM in this way. So next slide. So we continue to work with a great team. Without the team, obviously, we couldn't do this larger scale type of study. Just shout out to the members of our team. You can see who they are there. I want to particularly mention Christina Lazar, who's the person who makes Mark and I look good and keeps us organized and keeps the staff on track. And just because this is the pain treatment community, I want to mention John Sellinger is our primary pain expert, who's been very instrumental in helping us implement this study. Next slide. And of course, with doing a multi-site trial, it's really critical to partner with each of the sites. And so key to the success of our study has been working with really a fantastic group of site investigators, most of whom or many of whom have pain expertise as part of their repertoire. And so they were really helpful in us setting up the study and implementing it successfully over time. And remarkably, they've been very stable for the most part, almost throughout the entire study, which is unusual for multi-site studies. And we really appreciated their assistance in facilitating some of the issues that were coming up along the way. We also have key to this study, comp and pen and VBA. And so we had both local and VISN level support. And of course, the wind in our sails being our VISN 1 MIREC in New England. Our study was really helpful in setting up a mental health clinical trials network as a demonstration of the power of working across sites for the purposes of doing this type of multi-site research, and our prime center, and of course, our funders, both NCCIH and NIDA, supporting the various aims of our study. Next slide, thank you. So the design of this study was a two-arm parallel group, 36-week trial. It was a randomized clinical trial. And so we had two arms to the trial, the delivery of ESPER PM within this hub and spoke model versus usual care provided to the veteran participants. And in the trial, the primary outcome was pain severity measured by the BPI, with secondary outcomes being the number of non-pharmacological pain modalities that were being used, as well as the pain interference and health-related quality of life, which is also important for our cost-effectiveness analyses. In this trial, we had to balance pragmatism with explanatory features. So it was important to us to offer participation to a broad range of veterans. So the veterans who participated in the study had to have pain of at least a 4 on the BPI for pain severity, and they could not have used more than 2 non-pharmacological pain modalities in the prior 90 days for us to be able to measure changes in both pain and service utilization. The veterans in this study did not have to have a substance use problem as in our R34, but we wanted to take all comers and try to screen and identify those who may have problems and target that if that was indicated. And so our second aim looked at the number of misused substances requiring intervention measured by the assist, and also the severity of use for individual substances measured by the assist. Finally, our third aim, given the pragmatism of this type of trial, was to look at the cost effectiveness and budget impact, because in the end, we really did want to influence the decision makers, which we saw as VISN directors trying to maybe replicate what we did in VISN 1 if we're successful. Next slide. And so we have good news to report in terms of our success in completing the trial. We have recruited 1,100 individuals who have been in the study that who were randomized. As Mark had noted, if you look at our consort diagram, one of the benefits of conducting a study in this way is the large number of potentially eligible individuals. So we assessed for eligibility over almost 14,000 veterans and were able to consent 1,218 and ultimately randomize 1,100. Our retention for the 12 and 36 week follow-up, we think has been pretty good for this type of trial. And so we were at 81% at 12 weeks and 76% for our 36 week follow-up. And we just completed our last follow-up, I believe this week. I think we have one more shot coming up, but it will be concluded by the end of the week. Counseling, as in the R34, proved to be well received. 86% of those allocated to Esbert PM had at least one session, and 73% received at least two sessions. In this trial, given the pandemic, as well as the opportunity maybe to guide people with a little more support, this was done all by phone, and so none of it was in person, and we had additional follow-up opportunities with the veterans, given the pause or the less access available to some services in the midst of the pandemic and need to sustain motivation over time. And so they could have up to four sessions over a period of time, actually up to five. In terms of the characteristics of the veterans who participated, it pretty much mirrored what you would see within the veteran population in New England, 86% male, 76% white, 14% Hispanic, which was a little higher than the general demographic. And we forgot to put on here, we had about 14% of women veterans in our study, which is also a bit higher than the demographics for New England. We had 50% of the individuals screen positive for problematic substance use. The PEG score was showing that the veterans were struggling with chronic pain of 5.7. And one of the interesting things that we were finding in our sample is the relatively high rates of people reporting suicidality on the PHQ-9. I'm not sure if this is correct, but I believe we were the only study within the PMC-3 that used the PHQ-9 and kept the suicide risk question. And that led to a lot of interesting risk management discussions in how you handle that within a large scale multi-site trial done in a hub and spoke manner. Just recall, all of the research activities were done centrally at VA Connecticut. And so sustaining those relationships with the site PIs to manage some of the risk issues was very, very important to us. And so we don't have results to share with you yet. Maybe that'll be another webinar. I will say, we did complete a formative evaluation post-trial, and one of the findings of that is that Esbert PM definitely got known within the systems at the different VAs, and that the providers were quite positive and appreciated the added support in trying to reach veterans who were filing claims and ultimately getting connected to care within their VA. We'll see what difference it makes on the main outcomes. Next slide.
Okay, so I'm going to very briefly describe some of the publications. This is just kind of a marker for you. I don't think you need to read the slides. When you get the slides, you can, if you're interested in following up on any of these. So a couple of sort of findings along the way. John Selinger has done an analysis showing that The patients, most people with more severe pain were impacted more by COVID-19 than people with less severe pain, as were people who are Black or Latino or women. In some ways, having had difficulty connecting to pain treatment before COVID-19, probably associated with having more difficulty during COVID-19. Sarah Meshberg-Cohen analyzed which pain treatment modalities people with risky substance use used. It turns out people with risky substance use use the same pain treatment modalities as people without risky substance use. It had no impact at all. So maybe this was my stigmatizing people with substance use. I thought they might use or be referred to different pain treatment modalities, and they're not, which is a sort of nice finding. Kristen Moore, not as nice finding maybe, Kristen Morey led an analysis. So we collected nails, fingernails, and had people mail them in addition to collecting self-report. And we compared self-reported problems from substance use to whether nails showed substance use. And there's the sort of one of the main, so there are some discordance, which you'd expect. But the discordance is more among minoritized groups, among African-American and Hispanic people. And this paper is in a revise and resubmit with drug and alcohol dependence. And I think it has important implications for self-report substance use finding for this kind of long-distance study. Christina Lazar analyzed the where various pain treatment modalities were delivered. It turns out acupuncture, as of this is fiscal year 2018, most of the acupuncture was delivered in the community, and a fair amount of the chiropractic and physical therapy care was as well. Musculoskeletal care accounted for 19% of all costs. Back to the development of Espert PM. Okay, so we now have this, so we have the pragmatic trial, and we start thinking, all right, so how would we do this? How do we actually get Espert PM implemented? Who do we want to target? Who in the VA would do this as part of their job? How would we do a study to test that? And what's the best way to implement it? So this slide is just sort of walks you through what I'm going to be talking about for the next 10 minutes or so. So we said we really want to target young veterans right out of the military who just go for comp and pen and may never connect to VA. Each year, about 200,000 people leave U.S. military service. A lot of them just file comp and pen claims. In our pragmatic trial, the average age is 39, which is very young for a VA study. We thought we could get even more treatment naive people. We wanted people who were not refiling claims, for whom these were new claims. We wanted to look at this with real VA clinicians delivering the intervention. You know, having Yale hired therapists or Ross McLean doesn't mean that it could work better or worse with people who are integrated into VA care. We wanted to try it nationwide, and we wanted a rollout that didn't depend on NIH funding the therapy. Another reason to look at implementation, if you just look at the left side of this, is that comp and pen exams are not done at the VA anymore. The VA around right now, about 95% of comp and pen exams are done by private contracted examiners. So comp and pen had been a way that new veterans would connect to the VA because they at least come to the VA for their exams. If we want to get these veterans who are going to private contracted examiners, we need to contact them. So in terms of who would deliver it, we were thinking of the post 9/11 military to VA case management program. And as a question, how many of you have heard of the post 9/11 M2VA case management program.
So that poll is currently open. Just if you don't see the poll, just click the ellipsis and you can open up the polling and you can select yes or no and make sure you click submit. And right now we have people slowly responding and I will be able to give you results in just a second. Okay, let's let a few more people just finish up. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close that poll. And the results are, we have 33% say no and 14% say yes. And back to you guys.
So thank you. At least our study data response rates were better. The M2VA is the best program you've never heard of. They're really outstanding. Every VA has a post 9/11 M2VA program. It's mostly social workers, and their job is to contact each separating service member who's new to the VA and evaluate their case management needs. So if the person has a complicated situation where they need care in the community and VA, if they have mental health issues that complicate their connection, or if they just have questions about eligibility, the M2VA team contacts them and helps them. So they're really important in connecting people to VA. I think they're not as well known because they used to be called OEF-OIF coordinators. I think the name change has thrown people. They're not pain care navigators specifically. They're treatment navigators, so they're not specifically trained in motivational interviewing or pain care. And what we're proposing is to train them in that so that they make better and more effective referrals. Here's a way to think about the M2VA role. If you start on the left, this is where the veterans are coming from. They're coming directly from military treatment facilities. Think Walter Reed. We have arranged for an automated way so veterans who file those claims can go to the M2VA case managers. They can see who in their areas had a musculoskeletal claim. And then any veteran new to the VA goes on the queue for the M2VA case managers who meet with them. Now those meetings are almost all virtual. And then the M2VA case manager connects them to the programs on the right. So you see primary care clinics, sometimes directly to pain care specialty clinics or care in the community, addiction, whole health. So if you think of the M2VA case managers as connectors, these arrows, these sort of bi-directional arrows, these reflect relationships between the M2VA case managers and the sources of the veterans and the people they're referring to. And I think the hypothesis of this study is simple. It's that if the M2VA case managers have better relationships represented by these arrows with especially the people they refer to, they're going to make better referrals. The referrers are going to prioritize their patients. They're going to do better pain care navigation. So relational coordination is basically the strength of these arrows in both directions. That's my way of thinking about it. But it represents good relationships and good coordination between M2VA and the people they're referring to. So we've enlisted 14, we have the leadership of the M2VA program. That's Jennifer Perez on the right, Adrian Weedy in the middle, and Dr. Michael Sullivan Tibbs, the liaison between us on the left. We have 14 VAs, four time zones. We have, and they range, Alaska. I wish that we could visit these places just for fun. We have Alaska, San Diego, Los Angeles, Long Beach, Las Vegas, two in Texas, one north of Dallas, and one on the southern border with Mexico. We have Atlanta. We don't have that many in Middle America. We have Ileana in Illinois, Maryland, Columbus, South Carolina, Hampton, Virginia. It's a real range. And so all of these places that get returning veterans are gonna get the people who deal with these returning veterans are gonna get some of this training, which I'm just really excited about. If you go back to this slide about the these sort of connections and look at the right side, the primary care clinics, pain care specialty, addiction. So we've engaged the leadership of all the people on the right. You know, this really is it's relational coordination. So we have engaged and the groups are listed on the left, and how we've engaged them is on the right. So to just take one example at the bottom, VBA. So we've worked with them to get permission to get these comp and pen claims to the M2VA team. And that's been a process of working with them and explaining what it's about and working out the issues of data use agreements and such, and building a relationship in which they know that the data will be handled sensitively. And I think a number of the people who are operational partners are on this call.
Hey, Mark, before we go on, can I give a shout out to a couple more on that list?
Yes, sure.
The CORE Veterans Engagement Panel has been an excellent partner in really providing us with very helpful information and guiding some of our decisions and how we've gone about preparing the trial. And also a shout out to Freedom for the support for the approaching PMOP coordinators to work with us as internal facilitators. We're in the process of reaching out to them. And so these partnerships are absolutely vital for our success in being able to achieve the aims of this particular trial.
So you just, that's relational coordination in action, you know, thanking the people who helped us set this up. I love this slide. This slide shows the ages on the x-axis. It's the ages of the veterans who are seen, and the y-axis is the number of veterans. So these are veterans seen by M2VA within a year of leaving the military. And this first spike here, around 3,000 at age 22. So these are veterans. These are people who left the military after being in 2 to 4 years, and are leaving. And these are people we want to get early in their pain care pathways, and we want to get them on non-opioid sustainable treatments. And then this sort of tapers off, and then there's another spike around age 39 for people who've served 20 years and start leaving the military then. Okay, Steve.
Okay, so here is the design or description of the current hybrid effectiveness implementation trial. It's a type 2 design, meaning we're trying to simultaneously study the effectiveness of the implementation strategy. In this case, it's implementation facilitation, which we'll say a few words about in a moment, compared to training as usual within the VA, which we will also talk about in a moment. The intervention, that the thing we're trying to implement, is, of course, ESPRT PM. It will be slightly adapted to make it more feasible for use by the case managers, meaning maybe a few less sessions, and trying to track their use of elements of it rather than a formal full adherence to the way it has been implemented. And we are continuing on the guidance of relational coordination as a framework, and using that as a means not only for our formative eval, but as a means for organizing the way we're conceptualizing implementation facilitation as a strategy. As Mark mentioned, we are in lots of sites. The ultimate aim is 28 sites, which will be implemented in two cohorts that will be staggered. The first cohort is hopefully going to get launched by September. And then another 2 years from then, we will be setting up the second cohort of 14 sites. Sites will be randomized to either of the two implementation strategies, ESPRT training only versus ESPRT training plus implementation facilitation. And so we have two co-primary aims: determine the effectiveness of implementation facilitation and determine the effectiveness of ESPRT PM when implemented in one of these two different ways with the support of those two different strategies. Next slide. So I'm going to walk you through this. It took a lot of thought to try to create a picture of the design of the study and how it will be executed. So we have a one-year UG3 planning phase. We are in the thick of it right now, and we see the light, and we're going to get there, meeting those milestones. Right now, if you look at the figure, the orange is a formative evaluation. We are doing a three-part formative evaluation across each of the cohorts. So we are currently conducting that for our setup of the first cohort. This is going to allow us to fine-tune what we're doing and modify things as we learn from our sites, the things that might affect the engagement of veterans through M2VA. We will then conduct that again during the trial to see how the implementation is going and to tweak that if needed. And finally, at the end of the trial period, we will look at lessons learned and try to learn about how the implementation of ESPRT in this way will be sustained over time. If you look at the light blue, that is the period of time that we will be training the case managers in the approach using a virtual workshop approach. And then the training will continue through the use of simulated patient actors, which I will talk about in a moment. The dark blue is the implementation phase of this trial. So that's the period in which implementation facilitation will be active. And the mustard or yellow color is the period of time, the 15-month period of time, in which we will be recruiting veterans in the trial and allow it through follow-up to have the implementation strategy in effect while the participants are receiving ESPRT PM from the case managers. And finally, the follow-up period is in the gray. So you can see this is our aim and our goal. It's a little complicated, but we think we've got it organized well enough. Next slide. So the implementation aim is obviously to look at the comparison of training as usual to implementation facilitation. We're using the RE-AIM framework to organize our outcomes. Our primary implementation outcome will be the proportion of participants who receive ESPRT PM. One design feature that I forgot to mention but is important is we will be recruiting veterans who have gone through the claims process. Without the knowledge of the M2VA case managers knowing exactly who we recruited into the study, those are the individuals that we will be tracking to see if the M2VA case managers had provided them with some ESPRT PM as they've come through the VA. So that's an important study design issue that really fits well within an implementation science framework. We also will be tracking the adoption of the practice. So there's no real strong, clear evidence for what adoption may be. And so we decided on the degree to which the case managers use ESPER PM with at least three of our participants that have been tracked within the trial. We will be tracking the integrity of their use of ESPER PM, and particularly the motivational interviewing element as a way of doing ESPER PM through a system called Listen, which I will describe in a moment. And we will have qualitative analyses, as I described, of the implementation process. The clinical aim, the E in re-aim, the effectiveness, will be the PEG measure of pain. And we will track measures of substance use. We're actually still debating how we're going to do that. But that will be one of our secondary outcomes. We originally proposed the assist, but we're looking into some other options that might work better in this trial. And we will be tracking the EHR-derived number of non-pharmacological pain management services used. We have a big cost effectiveness and budget impact analysis planned for this, comparing the implementation strategies, and hopefully that will inform the broader service system when we're done with this study. Next slide. So training as usual will be a virtual experiential workshop. We are booking the month of June to train what we anticipate will be about 75 or so case managers across the 14 sites. And we will teach them some basic information about motivational interviewing. We will describe multimodal pain care and the pain care system in VHA as it's been developing, a little bit about screening substance use, and this training will be 8 hours over 2 days, and so we'll be delivering it in a way that will be feasible for people to attend by giving them multiple offerings throughout the month of June. In addition, next slide. So we were challenged by training as usual within VA for any behavioral interventions is some combination of a experiential workshop or seminar combined with practice opportunities afterwards. It was clear to us that to ask people to record their real sessions with people new to the VA would really change practice and probably not be feasible. So we decided to create simulated patient encounters. People will have the opportunity following the workshop to have up to 8 opportunities for practice over that 21-month implementation period. We learned from our core veteran engagement panel. They highly recommended we hire veterans to do this. We are currently interviewing veterans, and I'm telling you, it's the best part of my day. Highly motivated veterans, many of whom have acting experience, and they see this as a service to try to improve the practice of providers who have served them. They all have lived experience and very much look forward to training them to be the SPs for this project. Next slide. So here's an example of the types of scenarios that we've created to try to simulate the realities of veterans who are recently separated from the military. I see in the service of time, maybe we'll move on. Next slide. And we're using implementation facilitation. So for those of you who aren't familiar with implementation facilitation, it's a very broad-based implementation strategy where you pick activities based upon your assessment of the needs of the sites to try to put in place some type of innovation. So there's usually some type of formative evaluation that guides the selection of activities and how to fine tune the use of them to the sites. And you work with external facilitators and internal facilitators. The internal facilitators really have the site knowledge. The external facilitators have knowledge, either expertise in what the innovation is or in an implementation process. And so we have a great group of external facilitators. We're recruiting our internal facilitators now. And the whole thing is being tied together by relational coordination as our way of thinking about what we're doing in order to build better relationships, as Mark explained previously, and to improve the communication between M2VA case management programs and all the various partners involved in the pain care pathway. Next slide. And so the simulated patient calls will occur for the training sessions. I want to recognize Maria Gabriela Garcia Valcello, who has a lot of experience in this area, as do I, and we're working together now to pull together that aspect of the project. Next slide. Listen is a very cool feature of our project. So in order to determine how well the implementation of ESPRT will be in the study as a key implementation outcome, not just was it done, but how well was it done, we knew that doing it in a traditional way of person-rated integrity of motivational interviewing with an ESPRT would not be feasible in the real world. Fortunately, the field has moved along tremendously in this area, and there it has been artificial intelligence programming done that reliably captures the integrity of motivational interviewing within audio recorded sessions. And so in essence, this company is called Listen, and we've partnered with them and contracted with them. We're going to feed all of our simulated patient encounters into the system, and it will generate within a minute, literally, a full transcript, and it provides a breakdown of the sort of concentration of topic areas. We're working with them to develop one on pain as a topic area now. Next slide. And it will show you within the session some general parameters of quality. So we'll have the talk time of the caseworker and the patients, percent questions used versus reflections. You can drag on that bar across and you can find within it any aspect of the transcript that represents when clinicians or clients are talking. Next slide. And it gives you an overall rating for MI fidelity on a scale for 0 to 12, which will be our main outcome for fidelity, as well as cool things like empathy and collaboration. Again, this has been benchmarked with many person rated types of sessions as well. So the psychometrics of the system are very good. Next slide. So in summary, we are focusing on veterans seeking compensation for musculoskeletal disorders. We've established that they have high pain severity and high rates of comorbidity, including problematic substance use. We know that we have to partner with a lot of different people, and you see them listed here. And we need a hybrid style or type of study in which to combine mixed methods in order to get at both the success of our implementation strategies and the effectiveness of ESPRT PM when implemented within VHA. And so we hope to report back in a few years what the findings are for the study, and I think this is the period of time where we're ready to entertain any questions or comments from the audience.
Thank you so much, Mark and Steve. This is just, I mean, the word that comes to mind for me is epic in terms of what you've been able to accomplish, and you just did a beautiful job also showing the progression of this line of research and how you're moving it to a level of implementation and large scale use. So it's quite incredible, and congratulations to the two of you. So you. Hopefully we'll start to get some questions. So one is, impressive work. I'm intrigued by how your team was able to access CNP data. Getting VBA to be willing to discuss data sharing is not an easy task. Do you have any words of wisdom?
That's the question for Mark.
Well, I mean, it was a long negotiation. And their data sharing group is set up to answer like congressional inquiries. And they're very sensitive to questions about how exams are rated and data about individual raters. And I think the fact that we weren't that interested in the exams and the outcome of the exams, we were interested in the veterans for case finding, like that happens anyway. Like comp and pen exams have been in the VA medical record throughout. And so that would be the word of wisdom to not, I mean, if you ask for things that are really sensitive, they will understandably be defensive. You know, the VBA offices are behind bulletproof glass. they're careful about what they release.
So we have another comment and question. This was great. Will you be conducting community of practice sessions for the sites that have the implementation support? This would be a way to gather the sites in one place and allow for question support and implementation facilitation.
The answer to that is yes. So as part of our implementation facilitation strategy, and in that one slide that we rushed over, there is a community of practice consultation meeting. And that will be where we take the feedback reports from LISTEN and we use that as a means for targeting areas that might be important for the case managers for furthering the quality of their use of ESPRT PM in practice within their usual practice as case managers in M2VA. So absolutely, that's a great question, and that is part of our strategy. That'll happen on a bi-monthly basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that M2VA is a really kind of, they're really enthusiastic. They work with young returning veterans, and they have a really broad mandate. Like they, and some flexibility, like to what extent do they focus on pain care versus all the other issues that people present with? And we want them to connect with and liaison and be expert in pain care and motivational interviewing. The fact that so many of the sites volunteered, M2VA volunteered, and then each of these sites went through a fairly laborious process to get the approvals, to get extra training, and to participate in community practice calls. I found that really heartening.
Thank you. We just have about 2 minutes, and I'd really like to give either or both Dr. Kearns and Dr. Sandbrink a chance to respond and reflect on this incredible line of work.
Breedhelm, do you have,
is Breedhelm? Yeah, hi. So, maybe I get started very briefly. I mean, both of you, Steve and Mark, and of course your whole team who has been doing this, I just want to thank you for that. I mean, in many ways, this matches so much of what we think is one of the primary goals for us in VHA operationally, right? Expanding access to care in the VA system. I'm really appreciative of your work to try to go back to the original source, which is the patient, right? The veterans, right? As they make that transition during this often rather complex process when so much is going on for them, right? And how their life changes coming into the VA system, leaving the military system. So I think this is remarkable, right? As you know, whether we call it epic or, just such an outstanding work that is really, I think, trend-setting. We would love to find a way to do this more consistently across the system, especially if you can confirm further, not only that we keep patients in the VA system, but that we actually truly provide better care or care that helps the patients early on. And, the other part that you're doing is that you're providing access to care at a time when it's often most critical, early, not just after they failed multiple attempts. I think this is phenomenal work. Thank you so much. And I'm glad that our PMOP coordinators will be of help to make sure that you will be successful moving forward.
I'll just add my appreciation for the presentation emphases that I'd like to highlight. One is the integration of an implementation framework around everything you've been doing. I think that's a great model for a lot of research in this space. And then secondly, in that context, the extensive partner engagement work. I know within VA HSR, Amy Kilburn has touted the engagement science, or the science of engagement, as an emerging pillar, I guess, of health services research. And I think your approach is again a great model for probably many others. So I expect that this kind of presentation and other dissemination activities are going to have a great impact in our broader pain research community. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much. And really for research in general. Thank you so much to Drs. Martino and Rosen and for some incredible work and incredible presentation. Thank you to our audience for being here. I'd like to just remind everybody, if you can complete that feedback form, we'd really appreciate it. And as Maria said at the beginning of the session, this will be available in the Cyber Seminar archive, as well as all of our previous sessions. We will be sending out information about the 15th of the month for our next Cyber Seminar, and I hope that you'll be able to join us again soon. Take care and have a wonderful afternoon, everybody.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you.